Welcome, everybody, to Ed Policy, March 12th. We're waiting for a few more members, but I thought I'd begin anyways. I'll be handing over the gavel today to Senator Mae Quaid. We're not going to sing happy birthday to her, but we're giving her the gavel as a birthday present because both bills we're hearing today are mine, so I'll be sitting up there. I was trying to figure out whether I was going to say what I'm about to say today, and I agonized over it for a little bit. And it's about the news in Washington, D.C., about shutting down the Department of Education. And April 19th, next month, will be the 250th anniversary of the beginning of the War for Independence, when the colonists fired the shot heard around the world at Lexington and Concord. And that began the ball of this amazing experience called the critical period in American history from 1775 to 1791. And so yesterday, when the administration decided to close half the employees of the Department of Education, I've been thinking a lot about that and how in 250 years ago, the framers, the founders, the patriots, the colonists, the farmers and soldiers decided to not let tyranny get in the way of what they were seeking. And so for the next 6 months, there was this guy in Philadelphia named Thomas Jefferson that kept wondering, what is the purpose of government? You know, what's the purpose of government? If we're going to start this new government, what do we think? Is it going to be divine right of kings or something different? And so Jefferson came up with this idea, this notion, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, men in that time, all men are created equal, they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among those rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and to secure those rights, governments are instituted among men. Well, the first time that was written, he wrote down life, liberty, and property. That's what he started it. And he looked at those words thinking that was the purpose of government, to guarantee everybody life, liberty, and property. And he looked at that word property and he said, no, you know what? There's something more to our existence. There's something more to our existence than simply stuff, what we possess. And he changed property to pursuit of happiness because he thought that would be more encompassing on what the meaning of government is, to guarantee everybody the pursuit of happiness. And of course, you know, people said, how is this new government going to guarantee us happiness? And Jefferson and Franklin's response always was, the government's not going to guarantee you happiness. It's going to guarantee you the pursuit of happiness. You have to catch it. And that is what I think we do every day in our schools. Two days a week in this committee, is we're trying to pass legislation to let all those 850,000 kids in the state of Minnesota figure out how to pursue their happiness. And then they someday, through a strong, with a wonderful education and a great work ethic, and hopefully the parents instilled in them, and they'll take that great work ethic and that great education and become the great citizens that we hope that they all become. And when the Department of Education shut down half their workforce yesterday, I couldn't help but think, what message did that send to our kids? That school's not important, that education is not important. And I hope that's not the message that they receive, but I've been reflecting on that for the last 24 hours. And I've been reflecting on that Humphrey statue out front. And at the Humphrey statue, he was once asked that the moral test of a government is how it treats those in the dawn of life, our children. And then he goes on to talk about the elderly in the shadows of life and then those in the twilight of life, the elderly, and those in the shadows of life, the handicapped, the sick. And so I don't mean to be on my soapbox at the beginning of today, the hearing, but because of the actions going on in Washington, D.C., I felt like as chair of the Ed Policy Committee, I needed to say something about how I was feeling. And I hope, thank you for indulging me and for listening to me. And let's all continue to do the best work we can here at the state anyways, in doing all those things that those men and women fought so hard for back in 1775 and got the ball rolling for this great nation. So anyways, with that said, I'm handing the gavel over to the vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the words today. We're going to move Senate File 1336 before the committee, and we do have quorum. Would you like to move your AO2 amendment?
Yes.
Senator Swazinski moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed? The A2 is adopted. Senator Swazinski, to your bill as amended.
This is the Labor Day bill?
Okay, it is.
Sorry. Yep. So Senate File 1336 allows school boards to choose. Key word here is choose. An earlier start date for 26-27 and 27-28 school years. Many of our districts are worried about losing students to early vacations if we venture too far into the mid to late June, which would negatively affect both student outcomes and district finances because of the late Labor Day start over the next 2 years. This bill recognizes the diverse school districts and different needs of a uniform school start date does not necessarily work for everyone. By permitting schools to start before Labor Day, districts can structure their academic calendars in ways that better support student learning and local priorities. This bill, the part of it that I like the most, it's only for 2 years. And if during this two-year window, we find out that this doesn't work, letting schools start before Labor Day, and it has too much of an impact on the resorts and the state fair, then we'll just go back to starting after Labor Day. But if we realize that the local school districts that are choosing to start before Labor Day, and it didn't have the fallout that some of us, some people were expecting, then great. It's an opportunity for local control to decide. This isn't a mandate for an early start date. It simply allows local school boards to use the best decisions possible and for them to make the decision for their local school districts and what best supports the students and respecting the parents and the school boards and the local control to make sure that our students' needs are met. The A2 amendment simply removed what I thought was an undue burden upon the school districts and the Department of Education, which provided for some what I thought was unnecessary paperwork, which is something the committee's been trying to work on this year, is easing the paperwork burdens of our schools. So anyways, with that said, we've got a series of testifiers, and Madam Chair, thank you for taking the gavel today, and happy birthday.
Thank you. Colin Cox and Christy Peterson, if you want to come to the table, and then Mandy Fletcher will go before that online. Colin, please introduce yourself to the committee, and then you may begin your testimony.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Chair McQuaid, members of the committee, and staff. I'm Colin Cox, school board chair for St. Louis Park Public Schools. It's an honor to be here today, not only to represent St. Louis Park Public Schools, but as a former session-long page who served in the Minnesota House of Representatives for the K-12 Education Committee and the K-12 Education Conference Committee in 1998. That experience allowed me to see all the good discussion and hard work that happens here at the Minnesota Legislature and experience some of the long hours firsthand. My interest in this area began before that, and I've never given up my passion for ensuring everyone gets a high-quality education. Today, I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 1336. Late last year, our staff, always trying to be proactive and forward-thinking, brought forward a calendar for the 26-27 school year. When the staff showed that the end of our school year would be around June 15, you could see the concern across my fellow board members' faces. In St. Louis Park, we have been working hard to build a calendar around our community's needs and interests. Recognizing that our families who celebrate Jewish and Muslim holy days often had to make a choice between celebrating as a family and a member of a faith community versus missing important classroom time, we added key holy days to our calendar. Balancing these community interests has not been an easy task. We also must consider days for our staff to partake in professional development, for our instructional staff to complete grading, and occasionally giving everyone a break. In fact, we have 13 general concepts we build our calendar around for the school year. They range from instructional time to teacher contract days to transportation costs to balancing the number of days in a semester. And this is all before we also have to consider weather impacts, which are growingly more unpredictable. So while we understand the tradition of starting after Labor Day has a long history here in Minnesota, we are seeking more flexibility in our school calendar to meet our community's needs. By considering all of our needs, goals, and interests, there are additional benefits that would serve our students and likely students in other districts. Starting school earlier allows students to receive more instructional days before standardized tests, ensuring better preparation and improved academic outcomes. A shorter summer break can help reduce summer learning loss, particularly for younger students and those in vulnerable populations, contributing to stronger long-term academic success. But this is not just about test scores. Many career and technical education programs require alignment with industry partners and internship schedules that begin before Labor Day, ensuring students receive hands-on learning opportunities without schedule conflicts. While we recognize that there is a construction-based exception rule to the Labor Day start, we've already been busy making and completing investments in our facilities, and we are a small district. It would be challenging to conjure up projects for the sake of improving our calendar, not to mention it would be irresponsible to push this onto our community. What we are seeking in this opportunity is to have local control so we can be flexible with our calendar. There is no way the entire legislature can know the community calendar needs for all of our school districts. So we ask that you give that power to our school boards, who do have a pulse on what is needed in the community. Thank you for your service to our students, and thank you for this opportunity today.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Thank you for your service in the other body, though we don't tend to mention them here, but we appreciate your service. Superintendent Fletcher, if you want to come on camera, come off mute. You may introduce yourself for the committee and begin your testimony.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chair Swedzinski, Vice Chair May Quaid, and members of the Education Policy Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 1336. My apologies for not being able to attend in person to deliver this testimony today, but I had a series of other commitments. I am Mandy Fletcher, Superintendent of Blue Earth Area Schools in South Central Minnesota. Last year, Blue Earth Area Schools adopted a pre-Labor Day start to provide an additional week of instruction before the MCA testing window this year. This adjustment was driven by several factors: ensuring more critical instruction occurs before testing, minimizing less structured learning time at the end of the school year, and aligning with student participation in extracurricular activities, which often resume in mid-August. To fully assess the benefits of this change and measure data after a fully completed year, Blue Earth Area Schools has once again adopted a similar calendar for next school year, with again an early start. However, current state statute requires either special permission from MDE or a district investment exceeding $400,000 in construction projects to qualify for an early start, which is an unsustainable cost for a district of our size to do every single year. Without legislative flexibility, we may be forced to return to a post-Labor Day start despite having local stakeholder support for continued exploration of this model. Given that Labor Day falls particularly late in the 26-27 and 27-28 school years, I urge lawmakers to provide districts with the option to adopt a calendar that best supports local needs and student achievement. A small adjustment in the academic calendar could yield meaningful benefits for schools across the state. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Superintendent Fletcher. Next, we have Christy Peterson. And then following that, we'll have Joel Carlson and another testifier from the community of Minnesota Resorts. Ms. Peterson, you may begin your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Swadzinski, Senator May Quaid, and fellow committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this bill today. My name is Christy Peterson, and I serve as the vice chair of the Shakopee Public School Board, and I'm also chair of Southwest Metro Intermediate District 288. I'm also here representing school board members across the state of our public schools in my role as president of the Minnesota School Board Association. Before I get into my testimony, I'd just like to make a comment in regards to Chair Swadzinski's opening remarks today before conference. Everything he said is my why. Why am I a school board member? Because I believe in the value of a public education and the preparation that our students need for a successful life and to prepare them for that success in their future, not my future, but it's their future when we make decisions at our board table. So thank you for all those positive comments. Senate File 1336 aligns with MSBA's policy position of preserving local decision making by allowing school boards the flexibility to address the most pressing needs of their school districts, and that includes school calendars. I strongly support Senate File 1336 because it provides schools with the much needed flexibility to structure their academic calendar in a way that best serves families, students, as well as our educators. We know that one size does not fit all school districts across the state of Minnesota. The needs of Shakopee are not the same as my hometown district of Ellsworth, which is in the far southwest corner of the state in a town of about 500 people. A post-Labor Day school start has been a long mandate that does not always align with the realities of education today. Currently, Minnesota school districts with construction projects exceeding 400,000 can request approval from the Minnesota Department of Education to begin the school year earlier, allowing for an earlier end date to maximize construction time while minimizing disruptions for students and staff. While this flexibility is beneficial for districts undertaking major projects, many schools in greater Minnesota face significant construction needs that may not fit the financial threshold, leaving them without an option for an adjusted calendar. Allowing districts the flexibility, even just for 2 years, to start before Labor Day has several other benefits. Some of those include local control and community choice. The important piece to Senate File 1336 is that it does not impose an early start date. I want to repeat that. This does not impose or require an early start date. It simply allows districts to make the best decision based on their local needs. Schools, families, and local leaders are in the best position to determine what works for their students. And this bill respects the local authority while assessing the impact of this calendar change. The second benefit is the mitigation of learning loss as well as weather disruptions. The traditional long summer break can contribute to learning loss, especially for our younger students. Starting earlier can help combat this issue. Additionally, Minnesota's unpredictable winter weather often leads to school closures, especially in rural Minnesota. More flexibility in the calendar gives districts that buffer to adjust for snow days without extending the school year deeper into June. The third benefit is more instructional time before key assessments. Many standardized tests, including AP exams and college entrance exams, are scheduled in the spring. In fact, I think the AP exams are scheduled at the beginning of May every single year. An earlier start date provides students with additional instructional days before these critical assessments, which better prepares them for success, as well as prepares the educators that are teaching some of those AP exams and college entrance classes more time for instruction instead of trying to cram everything in to meet the exam schedules that the AP classes require. And the last benefit that I'm going to highlight is the better alignment with the higher education schedules. Many Minnesota students participate in dual enrollment or post-secondary enrollment options, which follow a different academic calendar altogether. Starting earlier allows for a smoother transition and minimizes scheduling conflicts that can hinder participation in these valuable programs. By passing Senate File 1336, we empower our schools to make informed decisions that enhance our students' success. I urge the committee to support this bill and give our districts the flexibility that they need to provide the best possible education for our Minnesota students. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Vice Chair Peterson. Last, we have Joel Carlson and possibly another person, and I will let you introduce yourselves to the committee and begin your testimony when you're ready.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and Senator Swazinski, thank you for your comments. Madam Chair, members, I'm Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul. And since 1997, I've had the honor of representing the community of Minnesota Resorts. And our members, and maybe you've visited them, and I hope you do, are family-owned resorts. The people that are there at the resort when you check in, and they're there that get your bait and put your boat in the water. These are family-owned resorts. And when I first started representing resorts, we had about a little over 1,100 resorts in Minnesota. We are now down to under 600. And I want to talk a little bit about this bill, but you need to know that this is the asset that most of your constituents are able to utilize to access our great outdoor resources. And when they're gone, they don't come back. And when the impact of that hits the local community, when the lodging from a resort is eliminated and it's replaced by one big mansion, that impact on the grocery store, the gas station, the bait shop, the fishing guide just trickles down to everyone else. So with that, I want you to know that we are pro-education. We have been in front of this committee dozens of times since 1996, and we appreciate that you have to balance competing interests in the state, and one of those is this issue that you have to balance the desires of local educators or school boards with the tourism industry and the impact that it has on these kinds of businesses. Tourism employs almost 300,000 people in Minnesota. We generate about 20% of the sales tax, and in our businesses, much of that is generated in August. And this is likely the most challenging bill that we face. And the reason is the University of Minnesota has studied tourism from their tourism center, and they know that when school starts before Labor Day, families are 40 and 50% less likely to book a vacation in August. And so we're not talking about losing a week before Labor Day. If school starts 2 weeks before Labor Day and sports starts 2 weeks before that, you're talking about taking away a third of a seasonal resort's ability to make a living. And I'm going to have Joanna Wahlberg from Brookside Resort talk a little bit. Happy to answer your questions. But this is really a challenging bill for us, and I hope that you will consider this bill that we've had in place for over 20 years, and it's working with plenty of exceptions for schools to start early when they need to. We hope you'll consider that as you look at this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Ms. Wahlberg, did I hear that correctly? Yeah, please introduce yourself for the committee. You may begin your testimony.
Thank you, everyone. My name is Joanna Wallenberg, and I am a co-owner and operator of Brookside Resort up in beautiful Park Rapids. I'm happy to be here. I will admit I don't know all the formalities, so sorry if I'm missing one, but I'm so grateful to be in front of you today and be able to kind of represent the community of Minnesota Resorts, who some are sitting behind me and some are not here. I own Brookside Resort, and I grew up there, so I'm what in the biz we call second generation resorters, which is actually growingly a little bit common, which is interesting. And so my perspective on resorting, I think, is pretty long. Now, I did spend a big chunk of that playing in the lake, which was really fun. But it gave me really, I've been listening to this conversation around my dining room table for my whole life. And I think what I want to make sure I leave you with today are a couple of things. Number one being, this little magic we have. Tourism is, of course, vitally important in our state. I'm not saying anything you don't know. We all agree on that. And these owner-operated resorts, I'm biased, but have this magic about them, right? Because as Joel said, We are the actual hands-on person who welcomes you to the place, who brings you the extra set of towels, who gets your bait. My kid might fill your boat with gas, right? And there's something so authentic about that. And special, right? It's such a connected industry. As Joel said, we are losing resorts, right? And part of the beauty of these resorts in our community is that we live in those communities, right? So I live in Park Rapids. I spend my money there. I shop in the grocery store, right? I contribute my time to the volunteer organizations in the area. I am very involved in the local public school, right? So as Joel said, education is big for all of us. And I think it's important to hear the perspective of we these owner-operated resorts, which is something really special and magical that Minnesota has, to say that genuinely, Joel's not wrong. I kind of pulled the 2024 data thinking, is it true? How much of my revenue comes from August? It's probably a third. And we are only open seasonally, a lot of us, right? Our properties are old and very quaint, but winterizing is financially impossible, right? So we've got 14 good weeks. If you cut a third of that revenue, that's a huge, I mean, I don't even want to think about what the number of resorts will be the next time we get to sit in front of you. So I think just helping you see from our perspective of this short season we have, we make the most of it. The revenue is a huge piece of revenue for us. We make a third of our revenue in August. I'm sorry, I'm not going to have your name. I tried to write it down phonetically so I could say it. Chairman Swazinski's opening was really beautiful. And it almost got me a little emotional, which, well, I promise I won't cry. I'm on TV, aren't I, or something? Because I was thinking about, like, education so important to me. And, oh, boy. Okay. I hope I don't need Kleenex. It's fine. It's a good point. I'm coming to a really good point. I think. I'm a huge proponent of public education. I have several degrees. My kids, it's very highly important to us. And I was thinking about what does education look like at Minnesota resorts, right? Where, like, these folks are sitting with the kids. And so here's some of the things I think that I just wrote down in the last 5 minutes that, while I know it's not a classroom setting, I think we can't devalue what we're learning outside of the classroom, too. So a couple things that I think kids are learning at Minnesota resorts owned by these folks behind me and me. How to tell a bluegill from a rock bass, which is super important, because if you've ever eaten a rock bass, you'll regret it, right? So how to tell a bluegill from a rock bass, super important. That's my favorite lesson to give. Which bugs make good bait and which avoid at all costs. Which plants the monarch? I can't believe how much people don't know about monarch butterflies. But if you hang out with me for a week in the summer, you will know all about it. Someone actually asked me if I painted the gold on the chrysalis. I was like, is this a real question? Because you need to get in nature, ma'am. Okay, so which plants the monarchs eat? How to drive one of those old school motors, right? Remember that? And it's like, won't start, and choked, you flooded it. Very valuable lesson you get at a resort. Perfect marshmallow roasting, which is, some of us are golden brown, some of us are burn it, take it off, burn it again. No judgment, whichever one you are. What the stars look like in a dark sky. I'm struck, right? We serve a high number of metro families. That's our predominant customer base. They've never seen the dark night sky. So, fun fact, we also don't have Wi-Fi because we think they won't go out and look at them if they can watch Netflix. So what the skies look like in a dark sky. How many gummy worms you can get with a dollar. Math is happening everywhere. How to swing a golf club. Where to find the frogs, super important. How to paddleboard, water ski, kayak. And has anyone ever done a fun bug? Because, right, that is a total Minnesota resort experience. They're weird, I don't quite get the physics, but okay. Finally, how to play cribbage. You're probably going to be playing cribbage with grandma and grandpa, which is another really special piece of these owner-operated Minnesota resorts. I probably had a whole bunch of other points, but I think you get the gist. I think maybe I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Ms. Wallenberg.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Madam Chair, one quick thing.
Mr. Carlson.
I usually have to work to get a chairman to schedule a bill when you're having your day on your hill. This one just percolated on its own. So the resort community is here for the next 24 hours, and Senator Housechild has a bill we're going to deal with in taxes tomorrow. I don't think we're being rude, but when we're done with this bill, we're all going to get up and go because we've got a commissioner that's meeting us downtown in a little bit. So I wanted to make sure you didn't think we were dissing the committee when we all get up and exit. Thank you for taking the time to hear from us.
Thank you so much, Mr. Carlson, and thank you all so much for being here and making our summer so beautiful. Senator Swazinski, any other testimony? Member questions? Senator Duckworth.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Senator Swazinski, when you're talking with school districts that are seeking to have this latitude or flexibility, do they give you any sense or idea of how much sooner they're looking to start? Are we talking a couple of days? Are we talking weeks, a few weeks? Are we talking they want to start in August? Just curious to hear what it is you're hearing from them. And then also, if they're starting sooner, are they also planning on finishing earlier is the other aspect of that question.
Senator Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Senator Duckworth. I haven't heard actual length of days from anybody. But only the impetus in this bill from day one since it was brought to my attention has been because of the late start. So I'm speculating maybe school districts will just want to start on whatever that Wednesday is of before Labor Day. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and therefore they won't have to go till the 15th. I'm making that 15th on June update up. So I'm thinking it's that. If they want to start earlier, I guess they'll have that prerogative, but like I said, it's only for 2 years. If we feel the number of resorts went from 1,100 to 600 to 300 closures in the next 2 years, and we can trace it to this, and maybe we need to reevaluate. And I just want to thank the prop people for the life jackets. It's nice to see. So I don't know if I answer your question, but I'm not hearing. And I thought, you know, it's like whenever we have hearings, of course, you know, it's fun to hear new things that you hadn't thought of. And one of the things I first of all, thank you for your list of things, you know, of not letting school get in the way of the kids' education, of all the things they learn when they're at resorts. But the other thing I hadn't thought of is how many school districts start 2 weeks early already, not academic, but athletics. And all the football and soccer teams that start in August, you know, 2 weeks before Labor Day already. I don't know how many numbers that would be, but I'm guessing for some schools that might be half the kids are already starting 2 weeks early. But anyways, if I didn't answer your question, ask it again, please. I want to make sure I answer it.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Swazinski. No, I think that is sufficient. I would be curious, before we would ever really seriously consider making this a law, I'd like to know exactly, you know, what we'd be looking at in terms of how early of a start districts truly have in mind, for the many of the reasons that were shared today by our friends that own and operate resorts. I think one of the most compelling arguments that could be made there that's in favor of your bill is the argument regarding the potential for learning loss. But then I asked myself, well, if they're starting sooner, I'm guessing they're just ending sooner. And so I think you're still going to have that same amount of time. So the learning loss argument might fall a little bit flat unless they are truly planning on staying in school a little bit longer. So that being said, I think truly understanding what this bill would entail, the changes and the second and third order impacts it's going to have on folks and resorts and what families do is really important, even if you do just limit it to 2 years to start. So the other thing I would say on a different bill is, I forget which testifier it was, but she mentioned that some districts do right now have flexibility if they're going to start a construction project, right, that they have the ability to shift. And she mentioned maybe there was some sort of threshold that prevents districts from being able to do that when they might need to or would want to, and maybe we look at changing or modifying that law as well to kind of help them out. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Senator Wiesenberg.
Madam Chair, can I?
Oh, Senator Swazinski, my apologies.
Thank you. Yeah, the construction thing is, you know, something they can do already, and be interesting to find out if districts have abused that. Or if it's worked perfectly and flawlessly. And I appreciate your comments as a member of a school board who would, in fact, be making this decision of early start probably have a lot more wisdom maybe than I do as a member, a former member of a school board. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Wiesenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So one thing when you're talking about all the things you do, something else that might be fun that I do with my own kids is take owl pellets, and then when you dissect them, you see what the bones are, but then after you do it, we make them into dinosaurs just because it's fun. So that's not what I was going to talk about, but that's what I thought about when she was talking. So so I think Christy Peterson, you know, was talking about school choice, and districts should be allowed to make decisions based on their local needs because they, at the local level, know what's best. Well, I agree with that. I hope we could spread that out because I have, you know, I represent seven counties, and we're not wealthy in most of my districts. And right now, 2 days ago, you know, we're talking about closing down a elementary school. We have to close down one of our middle schools. We have to fire teachers, and because of our historic spending that we just had, but because of their unfunded mandates, this is what's happening in my district right now. Kids are getting hurt, and teachers are going to lose their jobs. So if we could do local control statewide and let the local people decide what to do with that funding that's there, as long as they're meeting the needs of their children, that would be great. So those are things we need to take into consideration when it's like, it sounds fun to do these things and local control for this bill because I want this bill. Well, my communities are hurting because of what the bills that have passed in Minnesota, and it's not helping kids. So let's take that into consideration because these people, I've been getting phone calls and emails and text messages the last 2 days and trying to explain why these parents hate the school board in Little Falls right now because they're being forced to make decisions just to follow what the law says. And this is hard on them. So I'll stop there with that, but also, you know, speaking for the resort owners, you know, it's, and I know you didn't mean it this way, Senator Swedzinski, but you know, if we go into 2 years and you know, said if there's 1,100 and all of a sudden there's only 300 resorts in 2 years, I would be cringing if I were those people when you said that, and they're all shaking their heads right now. We can't let that happen, right? And I know you don't want that to happen. So let's think about that before we do this, because once they're gone, they're gone. They're not coming back, right? So thank you.
Exactly right.
Senator Abler?
When I, funny, Mr. Carlson mentioned 1997. This has been an issue since 1999 under my tenure. And there probably were 1,100 back then. And this has been an ongoing discussion over and over again. It's like Groundhog Day or something. And so the people who were concerned about this, legislators, Larry Howes and others who came forward from their areas where they represented these resorts, I have no dog in this fight. I don't have any personal connection to it.
We can get you one.
thank you, yeah. No, but as a statewide policymaker, it's really important to understand the unintended consequences. And so you have the convenience of this, and it's only for 2 years. Senator Swedzinski, I will tell you, if this goes for 2 years, it's going to go on forever. This will not be a one-time thing. So don't think that this is just a simple, easy compromise because of a late start. It's the end. And for some of those small towns that are trying to keep their kids out and living in greater Minnesota and have their kids there and have a school that they support with their property taxes and that they draw people up to and maintain the integrity of their small towns, that will be the end. And these are small but significant employers depending upon the size of the resort. And it's not just a simple thing, well, let's the school board decide and do what they want to do because it's handy for some purpose, but I urge us not to do this. I think it will be another step along the way toward closing greater Minnesota in ways that we will not like. There's no place to put them in the metro. Housing costs are already too high. They would rather stay out there and live their life. In many cases, these are legacy resorts. They're the third generation or more, and this is what their family has been, and they don't have another plan. So thank you. I appreciate your consideration in not doing this.
Other member comments, questions? Senator Swedzinski, closing remarks.
You've heard from both sides quite eloquently, and so I guess it's our decision to make from here on out. But nonetheless, Bottom line is we're just simply allowing the school districts to do what they've asked to be able to do. And so if the school boards decide that you two are right, then they'll vote accordingly. And if they decide that the previous two testifiers were more compelling, then let them vote that way. But I think this just gives us the opportunity to return a little bit more local control to the school districts, because they've been asking for that for the last few years. So anyways, thank you for indulging me, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you so much. Senate File 1336, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Enjoy your day at the Capitol, everybody. All right, next we have Senator Swazinski's 1311. Senator Swazinski, you have an A2 amendment to this as well.
I do.
Okay. You want to move 1311 before the committee, and would you also like to move your A2 amendment?
Yes, please.
Senator Swazinski moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed? The A2 is adopted. Senator Swazinski, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill came out of a three-part series in the Star Tribune. We've met. I visited all three charter schools in my district. We have a lot of testifiers that will be testifying to this bill. What our goal was simply to answer the concerns that the Star Tribune brought forward to our attention about transparency in the charter schools. And so that's what we tried to do. We were the first nation in the first state in the nation to start the charter school movement. One of our colleagues on the committee, Senator Abler, was one of the earliest people to start a charter school, number three in the state or something. Number nine in the state. And the whole experiment with charter schools was to just let schools do things that maybe the traditional public schools weren't willing or able to do. And so the innovation of the charter schools, we all respect and admire, but things maybe, according to the Star Tribune, maybe just need to be tightened up a little bit. And so after reading all three articles in the Star Tribune, it gave me pause for wondering about the accountability and transparency within our charter school movement, and that was the catalyst or the genesis of this bill. Last session, just as a reminder to folks of the mandates that we so often hear about from some members, many of those mandates came from the charter schools, who were saying we do want to be tightened up and we do want some to share with the concerns that members of the community are sharing, and we want to address them. And so I just want to thank the charter schools, the three in my district that welcomed me into their home, so to speak, and the willingness of Joey Syrian is coming up to speak. I just want to thank him as the lobbyist. He's been very open and very a great participant in this wonderful thing called lawmaking. So anyways, that's really all I have to say about it. Anyways, thank you. We have a lot of people wanting to testify on this bill. So let's begin. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Swazinski. So Joey Sienian and Beth Topaluk, if you want to make your way to the table. Mr. Sienian, and please correct me if I'm saying your name incorrectly. You may introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joey Chenian, and I'm the executive director from the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. As you know, Minnesota was the birthplace of the charter public schools in this nation with the enactment of the nation's first charter school law in 1991. There's currently 173 chartered public schools in operation in Minnesota, serving 70,000 students, public school students, or about 8% of the statewide total. Charter schools enroll about 60% students of color and American Indian students versus 38% statewide, about 60% students who qualify for free and reduced lunch versus 42% statewide, and 22% English language learners versus 9% statewide. Minnesota's chartered public schools are tuition free, independent public schools that are open and welcome to all students no matter ability or need, and are governed and operated jointly by licensed teachers, parents, and community members. We emphatically agree that all chartered public schools need to be accountable, transparent, and held to high standards. One of the virtues of chartering is that our sector can respond to issues as they come up with proactive, innovative solutions, flexibility, and speed. Since the charter school law passed over 30 years ago, my organization, MAX, has worked with bipartisan support at the legislature to continue to improve our charter law. Over the last 2 years, as Senator Swazinski alluded to, we passed significant legislation that is currently in implementation, addressing many of the problems that we've seen in our sector. These new laws bring a variety of new conflict of interest protections and higher standards, increased clarity, and more training for administrators, charter school boards, and authorizers. We've included a list of many of the new laws in our submitted documents today. These new laws are currently in implementation, and we're watching closely as they are having an important impact around the state. This bill presented before you today builds on that work and encompasses what we see as the important next steps in accountability and transparency to improve Minnesota's charter law and address issues we've seen come up this year. We've worked on this bill consulting with schools, authorizers, and many important stakeholders in our sector. We all agree there are some problems, and as a sector, we remain committed to proactively addressing and fixing those problems. We also understand that there is talk of a potential moratorium, but we can tell you that a moratorium that prevents new schools, grade, or site expansions does nothing to improve school quality or solve actual policy concerns. Instead of meaningful reform, it simply blocks access to schools that parents and families want and need for their kids. In the last 10 years, 86% of new charter schools that have opened remain open, and this is not a problem for our sector. This bill we present to you today actively addresses real concerns with real actionable solutions. Here are some of the root causes that we address in this bill. It increases authorizer training to require yearly training linked with performance review findings in the MAPES process with the Department of Education, and it requires yearly training with the Department of Education. It requires all charter school boards to create a finance committee if they don't have one already. And if schools are in corrective action for financial reasons, schools are required to include their authorizer in their finance committee meetings, and upon the authorizer's request, retain a financial expert to help them correct financial problems. It creates a pathway for more transparency, requiring authorizers to publish on their website for 5 years all charter contracts, performance reviews, notices of intent to terminate or not renew charter contracts, and unresolved notice of intervention, deficiency, concern, corrective action, or probationary status. It requires schools to conspicuously link on their website to these authorizer postings, and upon request from the authorizer, distribute information about interventions, corrective actions, and probationary status to the parents and school community. It requires the authorizer to publish financial information on their website, including annual financial statements related to authorizing, authorizing expenses, and balance sheets summarizing authorizer assets and liabilities. It also requires live streams of the closure hearings, in addition to the recently required audio and video recording and preservation of those hearings for 3 years. Finally, it requires affiliate building company boards to follow the same conflict of interest provisions as charter school boards, prohibiting contractors or folks with conflicts of interest from serving. In sum, we all agree that charters should be held accountable, transparent, and held to high standards. This bill addresses the real issues we've seen in the sector and asks school leaders and authorizers to take on additional responsibilities because we know it's the right thing to do. A moratorium would only hurt parents and families by preventing them from being able to access great schools for their kids. We encourage you to please pass this bill to continue to strengthen Minnesota's chartered public school law. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chinian. Beth Topolok, and then next would be Wendy Swanson Choi. You may begin your testimony. Introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Swazinski. I am Beth Topolok, Executive Director of Friends of Education, a Minnesota nonprofit which authorizes 11 charter schools serving more than 10,000 students. Six of our schools are National Blue Ribbon, for academic excellence, and all four of our high schools are ranked in the top 10 of Minnesota's best high schools. As an authorizer, our job is to monitor and evaluate the academic, fiscal, and operational performance of charter schools and take one of two actions based on that oversight. Either renew the charter school to continue to operate or terminate the charter. Recent media, the Star Tribune, has reported that Friends of Education has closed more charter schools than any other authorizer. We do not apologize for holding schools accountable. Charter schools operate under a performance-based accountability system, specified contracted outcomes, which if not met, result in required corrective action or closure. This accountability system is supervised by the Minnesota Department of Education. Minnesota law requires the department approval to be an authorizer, and all of our oversight activities and processes are approved by the department. If an authorizer is not doing its job, the department places an authorizer in corrective action and can terminate an authorizer, and it has done so. This accountability structure would be strengthened by Senate File 1311. And as Senator Swazinski addressed in his introduction, it addresses the transparency and accountability concerns raised in the Star Tribune reports. Friends of Education supports this bill, and in contrast, we have concerns about a potential moratorium which would do nothing to strengthen accountability, but it would prohibit charter schools from serving more families. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Haben Gebergergish and Brett Wedland. Nope, I'm sorry, Wendy Swanson Choi, then Haben. Wendy, you may introduce yourself for the committee and begin your testimony.
Hello, Senator Zosinski, and Madam Chair, and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity today. My name is Wendy Swanson Choi. I'm Executive Director of NEO, a charter school authorizer. NEO currently authorizes 30 public charter schools serving almost 10,000 students. 50% of the schools that NEO authorizes are led by leaders of color that have diverse lived experience and speak the diverse primary home languages of the families and students that they serve. Schools that NEO authorizes have a track record of outperforming the districts in which they are located, especially when disaggregating data by race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status. NEO would like to make three main points related to Senate File 1311. First, as you heard, Minnesota has a strong authorizer and charter school accountability structure in place that has served as a national model. The Education Commissioner, as you heard, conducts ongoing and five-year evaluations of authorizers, ensuring accountability. Charter schools undergo rigorous academic, financial, and operational evaluations. Authorizers and charter schools can be closed for not meeting standards. Second, last session, authorizers worked within the sector to pass more than 50 new charter school regulations to address issues that had been identified over the past several years. We are and have been working with the schools that we authorize to ensure compliance with the new regulations. The issues that the Star Tribune raised have already been addressed in many of those laws that were already passed. Third, NEO supports Senate File 1311 because it strengthens the accountability structure even further by ensuring that the Minnesota Department of Education provides annual training to authorizers. It builds on the regulations passed last session to require more authorizer oversight of financial performance, and it improves transparency. Finally, NEO would oppose a moratorium bill. Data shows that many students are stuck in the lowest levels of achievement in large school districts that have been in existence for many decades. Families enroll their students in charter schools that we authorize because their children weren't successful in their large school district. A moratorium would make it harder for families to find the learning environment that their children need to be successful in their pursuit of happiness. Thank you.
Thank you. Haben Geber-Gergish, and then Brett Wedland is next. You may introduce yourself for the committee and begin your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senator Kwasniewski, and members of the committee. My name is Haben Geber-Gergish. I'm a licensed educator with a decade of experience teaching in charter schools. I also serve on the Board of Innovative Quality Schools, which authorizes and supports 30 charter schools that take innovative approaches to meeting the needs of diverse learners. And I also work with Good Trouble, which is a youth-led intergenerational movement focusing on making schools more engaging by meeting young people's core needs for belonging, real meaningful work, and purpose. Charter schools address important unmet needs for students and families. They explore imaginative approaches to teaching, including project-based learning, language immersion, and personalized learning models. I taught at the High School for Recording Arts, a St. Paul charter school that serves many students who did not thrive in traditional public schools. And I've heard students say that they wouldn't have graduated or found their purpose and unique gifts without attending HSRA. Thousands of young people need alternatives to traditional public schools. All public schools should be transparent and held to high standards. As a board member of Innovative Quality Schools, I am committed to ensuring charter schools meet these expectations. Senate File 1311 requires additional transparency and accountability, which I do support. However, I strongly oppose any moratorium on charter schools. A moratorium would only limit families' access to high-quality, innovative education without solving any of the challenges in our education system or helping the students that are currently attending charter schools. Minnesota pioneered the charter school sector, creating a space for innovation that has influenced public schools statewide. Strategies like project-based learning originated in charter schools before being widely adopted statewide. Restricting innovation would only harm students, not help them. I support working with the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools to address any concerns, but a moratorium would be a step backwards. Senate File 1311 proactively addresses the current challenges charter schools are facing. So let's focus on solutions and not restrictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Brett Wedland, you can come to the table. Also, Sabrina Williams, if you want to come to the table as well, you'll be on deck. Mr. Wedland, if you want to introduce yourself for the committee, and you may begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, Senator Swazinski, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Brett Wedland. I'm the executive director at Nova Classical Academy. Nova is a public charter school in St. Paul serving more than 1,000 students in grades kindergarten through 12th grade. Nova consistently ranks among the top 10 schools in Minnesota for reading and math proficiency. In 2023, we're the only school in Minnesota that was named as an exemplary achievement gap closing school, and we're a national blue ribbon award school. Nova is an example of what can happen in charter schools, and we're just the tip of the iceberg of the great things happening in Minnesota charter schools. I'm a strong believer in public education and the need for high standards, transparency, and accountability for all public schools, including charters. The bill before you today takes meaningful steps to address root causes of challenges in the charter school sector by strengthening oversight. It mandates annual training for authorizers and additional training for authorizers in areas flagged by the Minnesota Department of Education, ensuring that those responsible for oversight are equipped to hold schools accountable. This reinforces the unique role of charter school authorizers, a level of accountability that does not exist in traditional public schools. We have also heard ideas of other ways to accomplish similar outcomes, including a moratorium on new and expansion to existing charter schools. This could be extremely problematic, and I want to share with you very quickly what this would mean for Nova and our students. For over a year, Nova's been working on the design of a facilities expansion. Nova currently has a model that's in high demand with a wait list of over 1,600 kids. Yet we do not plan to increase enrollment. Instead, our proposed expansion is about better serving the students we currently have by providing resources such as more secured entries, a certified storm shelter, dedicated spaces for occupational therapy, speech and language services, and academic interventions, as well as spaces that are typical in many schools like locker rooms, weight rooms, and gym spaces. A moratorium would prevent resources such as these from reaching students at schools like Nova. A moratorium would fail to improve accountability for the existing charter schools, but it would have a very negative and real consequence for our 1,042 students and those at schools like Nova. Rather than a punitive one-size-fits-all measure, I urge you to support the bill in front of you today, one that raises accountability in a way that strengthens the charter school sector without harming the students that we serve. Thank you for your time and considering this important legislation.
Thank you. Next up is Sabrina Williams. And then after Sabrina Williams, Jason Ulbrich, if you could come to the table and sit in the chair, and then we'll save some time with shifting. Ms. Williams, introduce yourself for the committee. You may begin your testimony.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sabrina Williams, and I am the proud founder and executive director of Excel Academy for Higher Learning Charter School in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. We are a public charter school serving over 550 students from preschool through eighth grades. I founded Excel Academy in 1999 with the mission to provide high quality, equitable education to students who have been historically underserved. Our students and families deserve excellent educational opportunities and options that meet their needs, and we work tirelessly to ensure their success. Like all public charter schools, Excel Academy is committed to transparency and high standards. Our board, staff, and school community believe in accountability. We hold each other accountable, and we continuously work to uphold these principles. Senate File 1311 will add new responsibilities for our school, but we are willing to do what is necessary to strengthen accountability across all public schools. We want to ensure that any proposed bill truly enhances transparency to effectively address concerns. This bill does that. I want to address concerns about discussions of a moratorium on charter school expansion. I cannot support any measure that limits families' access to high-quality schools. Parents at Excel Academy and across Minnesota deserve options when it comes to their children's education. While I understand the concerns raised, a moratorium is not the solution. It would create unintended, consequences that hurt students and families. Instead of limiting access, we should be working together to improve and expand high-quality public school options. Excel Academy, like many other charter schools, understand the need for accountability and transparency. That's why we support this bill, which takes a proactive approach to addressing concerns in the sector. We urge you to support real solutions that build on existing laws and ensure accountability without restricting opportunities for families. I respectfully ask for your support of Senate File 1311. And again, thank you for your consideration. I appreciate your commitment to ensuring all students in Minnesota have access to high quality educational options and to pursue happiness. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. You. Okay, next up we have Jason Ulbrich and Kate Hinton. If I could have people fill in the chairs. Oh, we have someone online, great. Then whoever is after Mr. Ulbrich, Kate Hinton and Joan Little, RBC Little, if you could come to the table as well. Mr. Ulbrich, if you are on Zoom, you can come on camera, come off mute, and introduce yourself, begin your testimony.
All right. Well, Honorable Chair, members of the committee, can you hear me okay?
We sure can.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jason Olbrich. I'm the executive director at Eagle Ridge Academy, and this year marks my 20th year in charter schools. I agree with the accountability and transparency and the introduction of passing of Bill 1311. It's simply the best practices of the best performing and healthy charter schools in the state. And I'm not going to go too much into 1311. I think the experts that spoke previously did a much better job than I could do. But what I would like to talk a little bit about is tell you about the story of Eagle Ridge Academy and how a moratorium would hinder excellent education for students that go to Eagle Ridge and waiting to get in. So I'm here to urge you to exempt high-quality charter schools like ERA from the moratorium. Minnesota's education system is at a crossroads, as you can read in the Star Tribune. Not just charter schools, but also conventional schools. Right now, there's too many schools that are failing to meet academic standards, and we're not doing enough to ensure student success. Proficiency rates in math, reading, science have stagnated. They've declined. Achievement gaps remain remain some of the worst in the nation. Parents are frustrated. Students are falling behind. Simply put, sometimes the current system is not working for the most at-risk families. But excellent schools, what the MDE, Minnesota Department of Education, calls high-quality charter schools, like Eagle Ridge Academy, like Nova, Costco that you just heard about, they are proven to be excellent possibilities for students. We have over 1,200 students waiting to get into Eagle Ridge Academy. We outperform the average state by 15% in any Minnesota state test that you can find, while receiving 30% less per pupil funding than our local school districts. This means students are not only succeeding, but they're doing so more efficiently and effectively. High-quality charter schools have a moral imperative to provide high-quality education to more students. Senator Zwedinski, we really appreciated you visiting, and I appreciated the history lesson that you gave us to start. It was a wonderful lesson regarding the founding of our nation, rooted in virtue, civic responsibility, and the pursuit of happiness. This perfectly aligns with what Eagle Ridge Academy and schools like us are trying to instill in our graduates. Through a classical education, students develop character, wisdom, and leadership. And we need to contribute more to these communities. A blanket moratorium would protect failing schools while restricting successful ones. It would deny families access to high-quality education that they deserve. Instead of blocking proven schools from expanding, we should be asking, how can we replicate their success and demand more from the entire system? Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Kate Hinton. And then after that will be Joan RBC-Little. Ms. Hinton, you may introduce yourself for the committee and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Kate Hinton, Executive Director of the Math and Science Academy in Woodbury. At Math and Science Academy, we hold ourselves to high standards, and we expect to be held to high standards. We are accountable to our students, our families, our authorizer, and the taxpayers of Minnesota. We welcome the added transparency and accountability of Senate File 1311. We are deeply concerned about the moratorium on charter schools and charter school expansions. We believe that every student has the right to a high-quality education. Parents should choose the school that best meets the needs of their child. Strong charter schools add options that complement the offerings of our traditional public school districts. MSA enrolls a far more diverse student population than our home district. Our non-white population is approaching 70%, and by graduation, we close achievement gaps. In 2024, we had one of the highest average ACT scores in the state at 26.5. Our Black students were less than 1 point behind our average and more than 9 points ahead of their peers nationwide. We offer a program that is in high, that has been in high demand for the last 25 years, and we are in the process of expanding our school to meet some of the unmet demand. Our high school is currently ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report and has been multiple times in recent history. We have 764 students enrolled for next year with another 591 on our wait list. We are currently in the process of adding an elementary school. As of this morning, we had 846 elementary students on our interest list. MSA is an option that families want. It is unfair to limit their access to high-quality charter schools through a moratorium. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hinton. So I just want to remind folks, the moratorium is not part of this bill and it's not on our agenda for today. And so it'd be really helpful if we could get comments related to the bill that's before us. Joan RBC Little, and then after that is Kyle Parsons. Joan RBC Little, if you want to come
on. I'm here on Zoom.
Yep, go ahead. Introduce yourself. You may begin your testimony.
Hello. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Zwedinski and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Joan RBC Little. I am a current administrator and the former executive director at Career Pathways Public Charter School in the Hamlin Midway area of St. Paul. We opened in 2015 and serve students from ages 6 to 12, from grade 6 to 12, who live in the metro area. Our students are considered at risk, high poverty, and mobile. We attract students and staff with diverse backgrounds, some who speak multiple languages at home. We focus on underserved and disenfranchised students who do not succeed in traditional settings. We have a safe, small school environment that provides hands-on and real-life experiences that build college and career readiness. I'm a licensed teacher and school principal, and I promote compliance and transparency. Career Pathways staff and school board are committed to these values. I understand that the bill being heard today may require our school to take on additional responsibilities, and we support that. All public schools need to be accountable. I am here because I want to make sure the legislature is asking us to do things that address accountability and transparency. To the moratorium on public charter schools, I'm very much against it and wanted to make that statement here. It would have unintended consequences, and our families deserve options where they can choose to send their students and also choose to attend schools. Families deserve more options as they seek a school community where their student is successful. We at Career Pathways have always followed all rules and reporting procedures required by the Minnesota Department of Education. We have received recognition for our accountability. This bill solidifies what we are already doing and is a precise way to address accountability. Please support Senate File 1311. Thank you for your leadership and consideration.
Thank you, Dr. RBC Little. Again, I do want to remind all our testifiers that the moratorium is not part of this bill. And so if we can keep our comments today specific to what is contained herein, that would be very, very helpful for our deliberations. Next, we have Kyle Parsons, and after that will be Matt Shaver. Mr. Parsons, you may begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair McQuaid, Senator Zwedinski, and members of this esteemed committee. My name is Kyle Parsons, and I'm the Vice President of Community Engagement at Great Minnesota Schools, a local education nonprofit. And I really cherish the opportunity to be in this space and to address this group. At Great Minnesota Schools, we believe in strong public schools, including both district and charter schools, are essential for a thriving community. I myself am a proud graduate of Minneapolis Public Schools and a current parent with MPS, and I believe deeply in the need for a diverse sector. We've heard from so many dedicated educators about how charters play a key role in meeting the needs of families underserved by their neighborhood schools, offering options that may better fit a student's unique needs. Research shows that these charter schools often outperform district schools, especially in serving minoritized and low-income students with improved academic achievement, stronger attendance rates, and graduation rates by comparison. I firmly believe that all students deserve access to high-quality education, whether they are in district, charter, or independent schools. Our education system needs to be diverse, flexible, and responsive while maintaining rigorous standards of accountability and transparency, which I believe is very much what we are discussing today. With that said, there are issues of accountability and transparency in the current charter sector, and I believe SF 1311 is a good way to start addressing those concerns. It is critical that any legislation addressing problems in the charter sector actually addresses those challenges. while maintaining the ability of families to access quality options that meet their children's need. I'm here to state plainly that a moratorium will limit opportunities for families like mine. I grew up in a multiracial household, and we know communities like mine are disproportionately affected by lack of quality options. Minnesota families deserve more access to high-quality schools, not fewer options. SF 1311 provides a great way to address accountability and transparency while supporting the growth and expansion of high-quality educational options across the state. I support this bill because it addresses real issues around charter school transparency and accountability, not focusing on limiting access, but truly trying to fix what our families need right now. So often in education, we are looking for solutions that will change things down the road and make things better for our students of the future. But I would love for us to focus on this legislation, which has an opportunity to impact children right away, these students right now who deserve our very best effort. I ask the committee to support SF 1311 as a way to move forward with greater accountability while preserving the agency and decision-making power that families value and deserve. We heard a beautiful opening message today. Thank you for that. We talked about the pursuit of happiness, and I think a huge part of that is self-determination. I think we owe it to these families to provide them with transparent data and trust them to make the best decisions for their young scholars. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of this committee for your time and thoughtful consideration.
Thank you. I have a toddler who doesn't listen to me, so I'm kind of used to it, but I'm gonna say it again. And Mr. Shaver, to the bill before us, if you could contain your comments to that, although I feel like we might have a very robust conversation about moratoriums after your comments, so not brought up by this committee. Mr. Shaver, go ahead.
Chair Mayquaid, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm the Senior Policy Director at Ed Allies. We support the ability for families to find a school that works best for their child, whether that's their home district, through open enrollment, or in a chartered public school. Students deserve the opportunity to attend schools that are rigorous, welcoming, and culturally affirming, no matter where they live. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 1311 as amended, and to Senator Swedzinski for carrying the bill. Fundamentally, this bill is about further accountability and transparency within the charter sector. There will be better buy-in from charter stakeholders if reforms are done with them and not to them, and Senator Swedzinski's amendment to this bill is a reflection of that spirit. One of the core tenets of charter schools is that there can be more flexibility and autonomy alongside more accountability. To put it more bluntly, the charter model allows schools to practice a form of local control largely unavailable to traditional districts. So, unlike a traditional public school district, if a charter school isn't doing right by kids, it can and should be shown the exit and cease to exist. One component of the amendment I'd like to highlight that increases accountability on the sector is on line 7.24, requiring a school to inform their community if they are not meeting expectations set out by their authorizer and are in corrective action or probationary status. Families choose charter schools for a variety of reasons and deserve to be informed of what is happening and what is often an opaque relationship between an authorizer and a school. We should trust informed families to vote with their feet accordingly. A lot of work in recent years has been led by the Charter Association, the Authorizer Association, and MDE to improve processes, accountability, and transparency with how it works from MDE and how they hold authorizers accountable and how authorizers hold charters accountable. And we encourage this committee and this community of stakeholders to keep at it, to continue shifting from a model of compliance and box checking to a toolbox of meaningful accountability for student outcomes and responsible management, which will lead to the outcomes kids deserve and families demand. Thank you for your leadership on this bill, Senator Swedzinski, and thank you, committee members, for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Committee members, Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was actually hoping to ask Mr. Shaver his thoughts on a moratorium. I'm just kidding.
Senator Duckworth. Yeah. Just kidding. Go ahead.
I sure hope nobody has a bill for that. Just a couple of actual well-intended suggestions for your bill, Senator Swedzinski, if that's okay, Madam Chair. Very, very quickly. On line 4.6, where it talks about meeting on a quarterly basis if one of these places find themselves to be in financial trouble, I would recommend maybe even look at doing that monthly. And then on page page 6, toward the bottom, there are lines 6.21 to 6.31, I think, are trying to get at a lot of transparency or conflict of interest stuff. You know, having been on a school board before, I know that that's very, very important. And one of the things that we sometimes do is we'll utilize a duty to disclose, or we'll talk about the requirement to disclose potential conflicts of interest rather than maybe prohibiting certain things. So just, you know, keep that in mind as you're looking at this bill, or if you're going to tweak it at all. Sometimes there are healthy relationships that exist, especially if you get into a community maybe in greater Minnesota that doesn't have as many vendors or contractors that provide services to a particular school or that a school would benefit from. You wouldn't want necessarily a blanket prohibition to prevent somebody who happens to provide certain services from helping out the school and also being involved with it, rather than just blanketly prohibiting those things. Maybe just say it's a matter of law that you disclose those potential conflicts of interest so that we have record of it or transparency regarding it. That's all I've got.
Madam Chair.
Senator Swazinski.
Senator, what was that line again?
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In general section, lines 2.21 to 2.31, my comments would kind of apply to the language in that section and what it's trying to get at. So thank you.
Thank you. Members? Senator Abler.
Well, thanks, and I appreciate the bill. I've been interested in charter schools for a long time, and the way to have choice in public education, which is what made us interested back in 1994. The accountability is really important. We have spent a lot of time since I got into office talking about that, and I'm surprised that we still have articles written like what the Tribune came up with. And that was kind of too bad to see, and perhaps this is the way to resolve it. I hope it does. To me, the way to resolve this matters is to have an engaged authorizer and a capable board who's not overpowered by one or two individuals on that board who just do things and the rest of the board goes along with it. My hope is as this new version goes forward and there's more accountabilities that we get after that. In the beginning, there was no startup money, there was no lease aid, and we just did it on our own. We lived on the formula. And charter schools going forward have begun to enjoy greater and greater funding streams, which can be good, but they've also been laden with more and more responsibilities as they regress toward the mean of being just a site-based public school. So I hope that as we continue on, that the point of charter schools, I've said this before, I'll repeat it, was meant to be laboratories and not experiment in careless ways, but a teacher. A majority of the board members are teachers. And the idea was this group of teachers had an idea, let's try this new way to do reading. Let's try this new way to do civics. There could be a civics one, Mr. Chair. Maybe in your retirement years, that could be your dream. And you'll be at our committee like talking about that. We have magnet schools in my district for arts and STEM and so on. And I think that if we don't get the benefit of this trial of an idea that is a sound idea that really works well, or like, oh, let's quit doing that, that we're going to really miss the benefit of what then-Senator Emma Rice Scott Young saw in 1993 when this whole thing got off the ground. And so I think sometimes as people get involved on the newer end of this, they just think, oh, we got a school, we're going to run it, we got these things we're doing, and let's get an administrator, and then they come from the regular industry, and now we lose a lot of what could be cutting edge. And I have to just say that it came up before. I wasn't saying that other schools aren't innovative to the extent they can be, but they're very constrained by, school boards and the principal and and all that, and they do their best to be innovative. But this is a school designed to be innovative. You read the original law, it was meant to do one of several things. And so we attempted to do all six things that were in the law at the time. I can't tell you the list. But I'm just going to push on the authorizers, and not to the woman in front of me, but in general, you have a responsibility. And so shut them down. Look, And don't just take it as a hobby industry for your other company you have, which I think some have kind of done that. And to brag about we have two or six or whatever, but to take it as a true responsibility, part at least the core mission of that wing of their business, to really make sure that these students come out right. And so otherwise the pressure comes to do this M word, Madam Chair. And they're like, oh, it's a failed experiment. And how do we best teach our students? I hope that the charters to the leaders and the charter school members and innovators can bring forward somehow ideas. There could be some legislation saying this worked there. Let's consider, have school districts consider doing this. Not make them do it, but say, here's our great idea, and to help the next max bill is like that. Say, we discovered that for at-risk students living in North Minneapolis that just didn't want to go to school anymore, that if we did this, they came, and their reading scores are 30% above their peer group somewhere, like that kind of thing. So I wish you all well in it, and I'm thank you to all the proponents of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Abler. So Senator Swazinski, I do have some thoughts. I think, you know, I made this analogy before, but I bet you the first successful appendectomy looked a lot different than successful appendectomies today. And so my thoughts on kind of what we're doing here and what needs to be done is that they're really, really different. I think that we need to just relook now that we have other states that do charter schools and they have, you know, have overdone how they've done charter schools in a bipartisan way, Ohio, Rhode Island, Colorado. I mean, there are authorizers that won't work in the state of Minnesota because of the way we have set up our system. And so to me, that says that it's not that people who work in charter schools, people who run charter schools, people who send their kids to charter schools, people who authorize, that they're failing, that they're bad people. It's that we didn't set up the system to do what we want it to do now. And I think that that requires a really in-depth look and a lot of work on behalf of this committee and on behalf of this legislature. And so I find myself looking, you know, at the bill and wondering, like, well, was the problem that performance reviews aren't listed? Was the problem that, you know, people who are on the board were contractors with the school? Like, I don't feel like I was reading a list of things that were like, we want to make sure that, you know, the board is not too many people who know each other, but it seems like there's a perverse incentive to continue to authorize a school if they're getting money. It seems like there is different standards for all the authorizers, for all the schools to meet different academic standards. And so when one authorizer says, yes, they're meeting academic standards, and one says we're not, maybe the one that says that school's not meeting academic standards had higher academic standards in their authorizing. I don't see any fixes to that here. And so I guess maybe my other reflection too, it's not that I'm against this. I think these are great changes. It just feels a little bit like we're tinkering on the edges and not like going in and fixing what it is. Because we have charter schools in the state. Lots of kids of color, lots of LGBTQ kids go to those schools, and I don't want them to lose those schools. I want them to do right by them, and we should do right by them. And so I think that this is a systems change problem, not a people in the system problem. And that's really where I'm going to focus my comments. And so when it does come to the M word, I think the thing that makes me really nervous is to continue moving forward and tinkering and thinking that we're going to get something better. And that was what makes me nervous, but I had no plans to talk about that today and won't. So you put the Star Tribune article in the packets, Senator Swazinski?
My CA did, but yes.
Okay. Well, so I want to just read, I'm going to just compare these side by side. I will pull out the nonpartisan research summary of what this bill does, and then I'm going to tell you what the Star Tribune article said. Okay. So the Star Tribune article said that about 75% of contracts were renewed despite reviews showing charter schools failing on key academic goals, often by large margins. Number two is a lack of standardization. Each authorizer creates its own criteria for grading performance. A few authorizers set the bar high for academic achievement, and I have a feeling one of those is sitting at the table, and penalize schools that fail to make grade. Very few do that. Other authorizers set the bar low and overlook even extended periods of underachievement. State oversight is minimal. The Department of Education reviews each contract for compliance with state laws, and they've found problems with 80% of renewals. but yet they've never sanctioned an authorizer for poor oversight. And then the fourth one was an inherent conflict of interest. In Minnesota and 13 other states, authorizers are paid fees for each charter school they oversee, which may create an inappropriate incentive to renew contracts for low-quality charter schools, according to the National Association of Charter School Authorizers. Okay, so those were the problems that were found. Here's what this bill does. Declares a board member who serves on more than one charter board at a time to be automatically ineligible to continue to serve. Requires the charter board to establish a financial review committee to provide recommendations on financial health, but not requires them to adopt those recommendations.
Madam Chair, can you tell us where part of the bill you're referencing?
Senator Susan, I'm looking at the nonpartisan summary of the bill.
What section?
Section 2 okay. Was the board member's serving time. Section 3 is the recommendations on financial health and best practices, but doesn't require them to adopt those recommendations, which would be on page, I circled that one, line 3.29. So they must review and provide recommendations, but I don't see them that they have to require them to adopt them. Number 4 requires a hearing between a charter school board and an authorizer, section 4 for non-renewal, to be live streamed. Section 5 prohibits a contractor providing facilities, goods, or services from serving on their building corporation. Got it. And then requires, Section 6 of the bill requires authorizers to post on their websites for 5 years for each school that authorizes their contracts and amendments, their performance reviews, notice of intent to terminate. And so I think we have two separate. We have a bill that addresses some specific things, but we've laid out wildly different issues. And so I'm not seeing those two align. I'm not saying the bill is bad. I think the bill is good. But I don't think it's addressing the big structural issue. And I'm not volunteering to solve it. But I do think that we have a lot more work to do to kind of fix the big problems that have been raised and getting solutions in line. I don't think it's going to do much. So those are my comments for you, Ms. Senator Swazinski.
Thank you.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And in Senator Swazinski's defense, I think if we're going to legislate based on Star Tribune articles, I've got a whole host I'd be happy to give you, specifically as it relates to waste, fraud, and abuse, and maybe even absenteeism, enrollment, and scores of our kids in schools. So I'm happy to have that kind of conversation and look at bills that holistically get at a lot of these issues, specifically as it pertains to our public schools. This one may not go as far or touch on all topics in that article, but I commend Senator Swazinski and those that testified on its behalf on their efforts to at least start to move the dial in that direction. And let's keep the conversation going. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. And yes, there are task force and absenteeisms and working groups, and there's a bipartisan, bicameral group working on an OIG bill. I think this is an issue that demands that kind of time and attention. Again, not to say that this bill is bad. I don't think it's bad at all. I just think that our charter schools deserve that kind of attention and that collaborativeness around a table, because I think we got some good stuff to work with. So, members, any other questions, comments? Okay, so Senate File 1311, as amended, is late. Oh, Senator Swazinski, would you like to close on your bill? I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. I would. Three quick comments. I think it's rare in the legislature for stakeholders to come and say, this was a quote, additional responsibility, accountability, and transparency, we welcome it. So for the stakeholders, for the charter schools to advocate for more of that is appreciated. I would ask all the members, if you have time this fall, or maybe after we adjourn, to visit a charter school in your district. I think it'll just open up your eyes to an alternative and innovative schools that are out there that just want to show you the good work they're doing. My idea for the cell phone bill, came out of one of my charter schools that I was walking through the halls and I commented to the testifier that spoke today about how the kids are all talking to each other. And because they banned cell phones in their schools. And so they're all walking down the halls together, doing what kids do best, pushing each other and mocking their outfit. I mean, just being kids. And it was just a joy and a pleasure to see. And so anyways, those are my three final comments. And I thank the members for a robust discussion and appreciate your feedback and comments. And again, I just want to compliment the charter schools for their hard work in addressing what the Star. Let's not keep shouting out the Star Tribune. We should also be celebrating all the other fine print newspapers in the state of Minnesota. But anyways, thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Swazinski. With that, Senate File 1311 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Swazinski, would you like to talk about anything before we adjourn? I don't want to adjourn.
Well, you have the gavel, but I will remind members we're not meeting on Monday to honor Indigenous Day here at the Capitol. And our next meeting will be on Wednesday. And I do want to remind members, I do believe we've only got 3 hearings left. We'll be the first committee to wrap up because of we have an earlier deadline than every other committee in the Senate, I believe. And so there's only 3 left before we get to the omnibus bill hearing or 2. So any ideas that you've been percolating in the back burner of your brains, the clock's ticking. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Swazinski. We will see you all next week. Committee is adjourned.